Welcome to Big Blend Radio, where we celebrate variety and how it adds spice to quality of life. Hey, everybody, welcome to Big Blend Radio's second Wednesday Books and Authors Show with Books Forward, our friends over in Nashville, New Orleans, New York. They're all over the place and they're awesome to work with. And they're always sending some of the best authors on the planet over to us. And today we're excited to welcome one of them, Tracy Mayo. She's joining us to talk about her memoir. It is called Childless Mother, A Search for Son and Self. And it'll be out March 28th, 2024. Of course, you can pre-order it. And you can go right to her website, tracymayo.com. And that's T-R-A-C-Y-M-A-Y-O. Tracy, welcome. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, you know, to go into your story, this is very personal. And to actually get that in pen and paper and to share it with the world has got to be quite a feat, or maybe helpful. But do you want to give everyone just kind of a little overview of your story, starting, you know, when, you know, as a teenager giving birth, you were 14, right? When you first gave birth.
Well, I was 14 when I got pregnant, and actually 15 when I gave birth. But my story spans 50 years, and it begins really in 1968, but it was 1970 when my son was born. And as everyone knows, that was a pre-choice America era. And I'd say the best way to frame this is that I was the only child of a high-ranking naval officer and a socially ambitious mother. And after our eighth move, in my 13 short years, I really longed for a normal adolescence. I wanted to have friends. I wanted to feel rooted. And what I got instead was a pregnancy at 14 and then banishment to a home for unwed mothers. Wow. Because not only the culture of the time, but also the culture of the military made it very imperative from my parents' point of view that this whole thing remain a secret. And that was so frequently what was done. Girls were sent away, particularly middle class and upper class white girls. Families really didn't support us. We were exiled to these maternity homes and, you know, basically forced to give our babies up for adoption.
Wow. It's kind of interesting about how history recycles itself. You know, it's, you know, I look at what's happening now across the country for women, and it's a scary time. It's going to, you know, it's freaky because, you know, it's complicated, right? Just put it that way. It's really complicated.
Very much so.
You know, I was raised in South Africa, and over there, you know, abortion was illegal, all those kinds of things. And, you know, and it was a big hush hush. And so that was in the late '80s and early '90s. It was still very, you know, if something happened, everybody kept quiet, nobody knew. And, but you know, so you give birth, but then from that point on, you weren't able to see your son or even have connection. It's just like, that's it. You gave birth and that's that, right?
That's right. This was the era of closed adoption. So everything was confidential. All I knew was that he had been adopted by a military family, but we lived in an area where there were lots of military bases. So that was kind of to be expected. I knew that he had an older sister, also adopted, 2 years older. And that was the extent of what I was told. And then in those days, as an adoptee, his original birth certificate, which had my name on it, was filed away, is still filed away in a sealed file in a courthouse in Richmond, Virginia. And then the adoptive parents are issued an amended birth certificate, which has their names on it. So they're so precious little to really to go on when I decided that I needed to search for him.
Wow. But yeah, because you have that longing, even though you're not supposed to. You're supposed to just forget it, right?
Right, that's what we were told. It'll be best if you forget, you'll put this behind you. But I think most of us quickly discovered that the fact of being a mother did not disappear with the relinquishment of our babies. It certainly was the case for me.
And it's got to be hard just even being pregnant because there was a bonding that happens even then, right? Like, you're growing this, baby. And, so at that point you can feel it. You know what I mean? So you can feel and have a bond, and then to not just, that's it. I mean, don't you kind of hold
Right.
on to those feelings from before? And you want the best for the child too.
Of course, but it is true. I never forgot the feeling of him kicking inside me, and I really felt when he, slipped from my womb into the bright lights of the delivery room that we were separated in body only. And they did bring him to me for 10 short minutes, and he was fully awake, and our eyes met. And I personally feel that 10 minutes was a critical bonding time. I never forgot it. And I'd like to think, on some level, that he didn't forget it either.
Wow. And then, so then he goes off and lives a different life, and then you decide you're going to go find him. And then hope, like, yeah, to even go and start trying to do that. I mean, how do you even get into the records to try and find him? You have to wait till he's an adult, right, to do that.
Well, it's interesting because every state is different. He was adopted in the state of Virginia. And actually, most states have this similarity, which is that the birth parents are never entitled to information. And it doesn't matter if that child is an adult or not. if he had wanted to search for me, he could have petitioned the court to open his records, and they might have done that, but I had no such right. So I just decided I had to do it on my own. But it is hard to find someone when you don't know who you're looking for, because his name had been changed, and really all I had to go on was his birth date and location, and that was it. And this is pre-internet, this is pre-DNA testing. So I didn't have access to the kind of databases that people do now, when and they can reconnect, I won't say easily, but it's happening more and more because of those two things. So I did a lot of boots on the ground, going back to the area, trying to. Oh, I did all kinds of crazy things, like look at microfiche in a public library to see if I could find out something that looked like an adoption announcement, in the time frame in which I was looking. Just some really creative but very difficult avenues to pursue.
Yeah, I mean, because you got to think, back then we had newspapers, right? It's
Right.
like, yeah, it's such a it's an interesting time, and to, like you're saying, boots on the ground. This becomes this mystery, you're like a detective, but it's still looking for your son and having that maternal part. So, I mean, did it get frustrating, like, to go through that, to maybe hit dead ends and then maybe find a snippet of something that will lead you to the right place?
Yeah, it's just a really good point, because I would find snippets, and I would think I was on to something. And whenever I came across something tangible, that let me know that this really was an experience that happened to me and not a dream. And I know that sounds bizarre, but there was a piece of me that had never received any validation for any of this. And to realize, well, an example is I found the records from Florence Crittenden in Old Dominion University's archives. And they didn't help me because I was the birth mother, not the adoptee, but just finding this little notebook that had my pseudonym, which was Susie, by the way. It said Susie, May 15th, 1970, boy. And it was this thrilling, just thrilling discovery that, yes, I was right. Oh, and I had his time of birth too. And it was what I remembered. And it was so validating. So yes, things like that happened to me along the way, but I was frustrated also because I just couldn't connect the dots. I couldn't come up with a surname for him.
But it's like you're at least finding out that you're human through all of this, because, you know, even today, I mean, there's so many, you know, pregnant young girls and teens, and they are still looked down upon, like, you know. It's
oh yes,
and things happen, you know, things happen, and I, you know, what scares me now for girls that maybe if they were forced into sex, what happens to them now, you know, with everything the way it's going. And I find that to be very traumatic for girls, and but they are looked down upon. I mean, even if you were forced back in the day, they would look down on you, like, what did you do to deserve that, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. You know, it's always on the women or on the girls. You know, we always take the hit. And, you know, I can't help but wondering, you know, in this current climate, if abortion is so horrible and must be stopped, where's the culpability for men in all this? You know, why can't a man be arrested for irresponsible impregnation, for example? You know, it's never been like that. I don't suppose it ever will be like that, but, you know, it does take two. And as you say, there are young girls now who may well have been the victim of rape or incest, and they're going to be forced, you know, to carry this baby to term. It's just unconscionable, unconscionable.
Yeah, you know, and then, like, for you to go searching for your son, you know, that whole feeling of, like, and then what if and when, and, you know, reconciliation or actually, you know what I mean? All of that is also very heavy, you know, to even, you know, especially because he's a boy too, or a man, you know, to kind of look at that part as well, is like, you know, to explain that. You know,
right?
What was that
Right.
Like as you were searching for him, thinking about the day of actually meeting him? If that happens, that part has to be on your shoulders too. About what am I going to say? Is he going to accept what happened? You know,
right? Yeah, you don't know what you're going to find, you don't know who you're going to find. I didn't know if I would even find him alive and well. Thank heavens I did. But I didn't know if he would hate the idea of me and reject me. That certainly happens. So I had a lot of fear around it, but I just realized that I had already lived through the worst that could happen, which was living my entire adult life to date without knowing if my only child was alive and well. And there was nothing worse than that. And learning the truth could only be better. So once I framed it that way, I never looked back.
So when they took him right away from you, as a mom is giving birth, I mean, gosh, and even going through birth is like a big deal. Like, just saying. I mean, I don't want to do it. That looks painful. I'm sorry, but it looks really painful. And I'll do anything to stay out of a hospital or anything like that. I don't
There you
want to be
go.
around anything with a white coat. Keep it away. And I do respect doctors hugely and midwives and everyone. So I'm just a baby. But when you think you go through this thing and then in your mind, especially a young girl, you've got to have, we're so good and with our imaginations at that age too, of, this is what my son is going to be like. Like, did you like name him in your head, or what was that part like? And then, did you get to name him? Did they take that name away? Like you're saying, just boy, right?
Well, I did get to name him, and
Ooh.
that was one of the few kindnesses that they offered me. So I named him Thomas Neil Mayo, and that is on his original birth certificate, which,
Wow.
as I mentioned, is still in a sealed file. But I did name him. And so, in my mind, for all those years before we reconnected, I thought of him as baby Thomas. So, yes, I named him, but his name was changed by his adoptive parent. Well, I'm sorry, they didn't know what I had named him. So,
Oh, okay.
for them, all they knew was they were adopting a 3-week-old baby boy, and they gave him a name of their choosing.
For 3 weeks, you get to see him for those few minutes, right? And then for 3 weeks, he's away from anyone that can really give that nourishment and nurturing. And
That's right.
so.
They placed him in a foster family for 3 weeks. And of
Okay.
course, nobody told me any of this, but the reason for it is that, in according to Virginia law, I wasn't able to officially relinquish him until he was 3 weeks old. So in other words, my family had 3 weeks to change our minds, is what that is. But of course, no one told me that because they had no intention of changing their minds about this. So he was in a foster home for 3 weeks. Once my mother and I, because I was a juvenile, signed the relinquishment papers, he then went to his adoptive family.
Okay. Wow. But that's quite a twirl around for him,
Well,
Wonder what that does for
yes.
the child,
Oh, I know it's almost like don't get me started, but just the wrenching away from me had to be very traumatic for him. And then to go to strangers who weren't going to keep them, I'm sure they were kind and loving people or they wouldn't have been foster parents, but that's another abrupt change, upheaval, different smells, different sounds. And then 3 weeks later, finally to go to his adoptive family, it had to be highly traumatic for him.
I know it's and to just walk away from it, we have these stories in our family too, and my mom's, siblings, and one, her older sister, was basically, oh, let's say she was working for some guy, and he just, married man, and they had a fling basically, but she was so young and naive, let's put it that way.
Sure.
Had no idea what this man was about. Just, and your hormones at that time. Let's just think about that. Teenage girls and hormones. And
Right.
boys, that's a whole other thing. But this was a man abusing this situation. And she falls pregnant. Of course, nobody wants to know. And she was sent off. No one's going to know. And I think going to get the, I don't know if she married somebody else in pretense, but she, or, the dad wasn't allowed to know. And you were sent away. And that's it. No one knows where the sister went. She was just
Wow.
sent away, kind of thing, so it's kind of a it's a wild world out there, what happened back then, but I wonder where we're going to go now with this kind of thing.
I
What's going
know.
to happen to young girls now? It's It's so hard because at the same time, families can work together sometimes, depending on the family and the predicaments, right? To be able to give a child a loving home. Grandparents are great too, a lot of times in helping, yeah, so that's gotta, I mean, did your parents ever, was it, that's it, like closed book now, except for your feelings, obviously.
They also bought into this idea that this was all best forgotten. So they never ever mentioned my child. It was as if it never happened. And I really sensed that that was an unspoken requirement for my re-entry back into the family, that I could only be fully accepted again if we all pretended that my pregnancy, his birth, and his relinquishment never happened. Now, I will say that when I found him after my parents got over the shock of it, oh, this just really happened, they welcomed him with open
Oh,
arms.
that's cool.
And
It's a
yes,
different
it
time.
was, it that was, that helped me forgive them quite a bit.
Yeah, there's it's so hard with these, like I said, it's complicated. All of this is, right? It's complicated,
Oh,
complex,
yes.
and because we're all human beings too. And it's like when we look back on times and how women have been treated and like how, black people have been treated in this country, Native Americans, all of this. We could go into that for years. It's complicated. And a lot of times people were just following what they were supposed to do, the society rules, this is how you need to be. And without questioning even, or even if there was a questioning, it's like, do I dare break the mold? Do I dare, like, especially when it's careers involved, military careers, that's a big deal. That's like, that could change a whole family's dynamic. Well, obviously it does, but you know what I mean? I think people, there's a part of like looking back and going, okay, like it's hard, but there's like a forgiveness thing that should hopefully can be made, like what you're saying. Because I think sometimes people just do what they think best, even if it's completely wrong. And maybe deep down they know it, right? Maybe deep down they may have been struggling about it their whole lives. I mean, that's their grandchild, So I'm not excusing it all. I'm just saying it's,
No, you're right, and that's a really good point. They were also, I don't want to say victims exactly, but they were part of the society in which they were raised, and in a very real way, they did what they thought was best. But I also believe that there was quite a bit of self-interest driving each of them, for different reasons. My father was a rising star in the Navy, and my mother as, well, I think I said socially ambitious, and that's a good way to describe
That's
her.
a good term.
So it is complicated. They might have been well-meaning, but they also had their own interests at heart.
What led you to say, okay, I'm going to write this as a memoir and share this because it's so personal? And I appreciate you being on the show today to communicate about this, because I think personally, I think this helps a lot of women and families to have some understanding. So,
Well,
and
thank
just
you.
children too. I mean, it's just, these things affect so many people, and it's a ripple effect, right? But for you, what was it that you said, okay, I'll share this story?
I think that the main driver for me was having a reconciliation with my son and feeling his forgiveness for my abandonment of him. And even though I was forced to abandon him, it was still an abandonment. And to feel that he forgave me and that he understood just gave me the strength to say, I want to share this story with the world. So I decided when we were first reunited, which was now 30 years ago, that I would write this. But I waited to start until I had retired from a very demanding job. And candidly, after my parents had passed away, because I really wasn't sure I could write the raw truth about everything if they were going to read it.
That's good.
So, yeah, I had it in my mind for many, many years. And as soon as I retired, I started.
Is it therapeutic to write it down?
Oh, very, very. It was also exquisitely painful, because, I needed to go back and unearth, to excavate these experiences and these memories, many of whom I had forgotten or buried. And that was very, very painful, but it was also very healing. The whole journey was extraordinary and more healing than it was hurtful.
And the writing part of it, I was reading that you've done a lot of, definitely an ambitious person. You are definitely ambitious. But you also didn't just do this flippantly. You didn't just go, oh, I've got a story, let me just type it out and publish it. You did some work to do the craft of writing.
Yes, well, thank you. I did. I had done a lot of writing in my career, but it was corporate writing, proposal writing, subcontract language writing, very different than creative writing. And so I realized that, frankly, I didn't really know what I was doing. So I did take a lot of craft courses and had a lot of excellent feedback that really helped along the way, but still it was a 7-year journey to really get this book down and polish it.
That's a long time. And then all the
I
work you
know.
did, the groundwork to find your son. I mean, that's like an adventure in itself, but it doesn't sound feel like an adventure. You know what I mean? It's not like, I said it's like solving a mystery, but it's a personal, emotional, feelings, a lot of feelings, in that. So it's not like here's this grand Nancy Drew adventure, at all. So I just think it's, going out there and not having all the tools that we have now, it's remarkable and commendable. And
Thank you.
I think a lot of times people give up on this, and it could, I have a lot of friends who have given up their children at as a teenager, or maybe got themselves into trouble and have had to have an abortion and things, those kinds of natures of things. And I think no one's satisfied with it. There's no bit of restlessness, no rest. It's not like just a closed book. I don't care what was the outcome of that, of a pregnancy, right?
Oh,
No
no, you're
one's
very right.
calm about it,
No, and there's always the trauma of the event, either the relinquishment or the abortion, and no matter how that young girl's life turns out, in my case, I was extremely lucky to have to develop a really close bond with my adult son. I've been extremely lucky, but the trauma is still the trauma. It's not wrapped up in pretty paper and made to go away.
No.
A good outcome later doesn't negate or replace the bad outcome earlier.
Yeah. And he's cool with you doing this, like you were saying, it was something you guys discussed at the beginning of writing this.
Yes. He's been just amazingly supportive. I'd say he's probably read maybe 60% of the book. I send it to them in chapters sometimes as I finish them up and completely out of order. He has a good sense for what the entire manuscript will be like. And yeah, he's been just wonderfully supportive.
That's awesome. That just feels good, right? You know what I mean? It's
Oh,
like you,
yes.
yeah, it's like okay, you know, because when we always have those thoughts in our head, like, why am I here on earth, you know, what's the meaning of life? And you know, family is a huge part of it, and family is always complicated. I don't care who, what, and where around the world, family is complicated. I don't know anyone who has a family that's not complicated. If it's not
No.
complicated, something's being hidden.
You're right.
Seriously.
That's a
It is. Yeah.
truthful point.
Yeah. Because we're humans, you know, and humans do things. And it just, you know, it is what it is on that. But I think helping people now, especially for girls and women, you know, it gives hope. I think what you've done is give hope. You know,
Well, thank you. I
yeah.
do appreciate that, and I hope that I do hope my story can make a difference for some women in some way, or for adoptees that maybe haven't been reunited and wonder if their birth mother is out there and actually cares.
And for the family, the parents that adopted too, you know, that's another part of it. Of just having, I have friends who adopted a young girl, and the biological mother was a drug addict, and the daughter, you know, they got her as a baby too, but she was loaded of drugs, you know, because of the mom,
Oh, that's so
and
difficult.
it was difficult. And then the mom started finding out, and it was just this very traumatic thing for everyone, because the mom was never, she in and out of rehabs. And you know, there's a reason why too. You know, addiction is a reality, and it's, there's reasons why people have go through addiction. And it took a lot of work, a lot of therapy and things like that for everyone, you know, on all sides to go through it. And now the daughter is actually a therapist and helps people, which I think is quite wonderful. So, you know what I mean? And she taught herself, or not taught herself, went to school and did all these different modalities in body, mind, and spirit. So it's not just, you know, a therapist. It's yeah, good.
Well, good
Like
for her.
teaching the power of journaling and things like that for therapy and for, you know, getting through things. And at times these, you know, things we go through as human beings can be really huge burdens that you feel. And that's why I said I brought up about the hope. Hope goes a long way, even if it's just a thread. It can go so far to keep people moving forward, because it can
Yes.
be heavy. And so I think with your book, that hope is so crucial. And you had to have had some strings of hope to keep going in your journey to find him.
Oh, absolutely. I was extremely hopeful.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned, I imagined all kinds of scenarios, something wonderful, something tragic, rejection, death. I imagined everything, but I always had hope, and I actually really believed that if I found him and was able to have even one conversation with him, I really had the firm conviction that I wouldn't blow it, that I wouldn't say something that would chase him away. And that kept me going, just conviction that I would know how to talk to him. And I guess that proved to be correct.
That's awesome, though. I mean, you have a happy ending. You know,
Do.
it's not an ending. You know, that's the beauty of it too. I
True,
didn't mean to
true.
say it that way. That sounds bad. But you know, it's yeah, there's a lot of strength to what you've done. There's a lot of strength, a lot of strength. And that's the thing. I think, you know, you're still a mom. All those years when he wasn't around you, you were still a mom.
That's right. And I thank you for saying that because I always felt that way. I always felt that I was his mother, and I am his
Yeah,
mother.
you are. Yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. Well, I really appreciate you joining us here, Tracy. Everyone, again, the memoir comes out March 28th, 2024. You can go to Tracy's website. It's tracymayo.com, TracyMayo, tracymayo.com. The book, again, the memoir is called Childless Mother, A Search for Son and Self. Thank you so much, Tracy. It's been a true pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much, Lisa. This has been wonderful.
Thank you for listening to Big Blend Radio. Keep up with our shows at bigblendradio.com.